the recovery was when I started realizing how broken I was. And I'd often say to people, I didn't know I was so lacking vision until I started gaining vision again. And I didn't know I was so lacking life and expectation and faith until I started engaging those things again.
Well, hey friends, it's Jason here, and I want to thank you for joining us for another episode of the Canadian Church Leaders Podcast. It's such a joy for us to host these conversations, and for our team and our supporters, we just feel so strongly that any investment in pastors in Canada is a strategic investment. Like, it's good for the health of not just churches, but the health of our whole nation. And we love that through these conversations, we get to connect with hundreds of pastors from cities across our country. And what's really fun is that every once in a while, we get to gather and meet up with pastors in person. And at the end of June, June 27th, we are coming to Winnipeg to host a pastors meetup. This is a two-hour gathering. I'll be there. Our friend Daryl Johnson will be there as well. And it's a chance to connect with each other, to meet other pastors in our city, to learn from Daryl. We'll do some Q&A with him. We'll eat some great snacks. We'll pray together. It's been a really meaningful time when we've done these gatherings before. And so if you are in the Winnipeg area, come and spend some time with us on June 27th. If you want to find out more or register, you can go to ccln.ca. And today on the podcast, our guest is Evan Allnut. He's the lead pastor of Northgate Church, which is located in the beautiful Comox Valley on Vancouver Island. And Evan is an amazing friend and person to chat with. And he offered a lot of wisdom and vulnerability from his journey, navigating the last 4 years in local church, all the ups and downs. And one of the things I loved about our conversation was not just hearing his reflections on his interior life during those challenges, but how he's rallied and found courage to keep on going. And one of the things I loved we chatted about was some unique ways that they are serving a very particular demographic in their community. And it was so inspiring to hear about. So I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. But before we jump in with Evan, here's a quick word from our friends at Generis who make these podcasts possible.
We want to take a quick moment to thank Generis for partnering with us to make today's episode possible. Generis exists to help church leaders like yourself weave a culture of generosity into the fabric of your church. Now, we know any conversation about fundraising can feel awkward or tricky, but they don't have to. Generosity is essential to the mission of God in our churches. And Generis is all about coming alongside pastors to help foster healthy cultures of generosity so our churches can step into the mission God has for us. And here's how they do it. They take the time to understand the unique culture and story of your church. Then they take biblical principles and other proven strategies to build a tailored plan designed for your community. If you want to find out more, we want to introduce you to John Wright from their team. He was a pastor for many years, and now he's giving his time working with Generis and local churches. You can find John's email in the show notes of this episode.
Well, Evan, it's a joy to be with you, man. I was telling you earlier that I just do this podcast to make sure that people I want to be friends with have to spend time with me. So thanks for agreeing to spend an hour with me.
It's great, man. So glad to be here with you.
Dude, give us a sense of your world. You're in Courtney, for those that don't know, the Courtney Comox Valley. I think one of the most beautiful places in all of the world, not just all of Canada. Give us a sense of your place, your family, your church. Just kind of orient us in your world.
Yeah, cool. Been at Northgate Church. It's a four-square church. Comox Valley, lead pastor right here. Somewhere on that island is where we are.
For those listening audio only, he's got a beautiful map in the background that he just pointed to. And that's a plug to watch on YouTube too.
Yeah, that's right. Jump on. Yeah. So been here a while. My wife, Kendall, 15 years married. We've got a 12-year-old daughter, Isabella, 10-year-old boy, Hardy, and 7-year-old girl, Nola. And wow. Yeah, we've been here. We love Vancouver Island. We love Canada. We've got a heart to see God do some really special things here. And it is one of the most beautiful places. Unfortunately, more and more people are finding out. There's a lot of people who are not happy about people finding out about our beautiful little gem here.
It's a stunning place and a great city. And my brother-in-law and sister-in-law pastor just down the road from you at Comox Pentecostal. And it's just such a special place to visit. And I think that it reflects a lot of Canadian cities, it's not tiny, but it's not like a Vancouver or Toronto. And there's just an amazing sort of cross section of the whole world that show up in these cities across Canada. And I just love your own passion for Vancouver Island as a region, but for even this more smaller neighborhood of where you've been called to.
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of unique. I mean, on the island, we're about 3 hours to the north side, about 3 hours to the south side, about 3 hours to the west side. And so there's some dirt roads that take longer to get to certain spots, but we feel pretty central. So feel like it's a neat spot, a strategic spot to kind of dream for this whole space and this whole region as well.
Mm-hmm. Northgate is 87 years old.
Come on.
Tell me a bit about the story of the church. I'm so interested.
Yeah, I mean, the story, Foursquare was even fairly young. Foursquare as a denomination globally, it started in 1923. And some people came up from California, started in the lower mainland, west side of Canada, and then in 1937 made their way over to Vancouver Island and started envisioning what church could look like. And there's some fun stories. I don't know how true all of them are, but just a few dollars that they had, and you know, just started meeting in fairly random spaces, really believing for just, man, God's got something for this space. Mm. Holy Spirit's real. Like, let's believe that something powerful is going to take place here. And so they did. They started meeting. It's fairly small ministry, like a lot of ministry was in that time, especially in Canada, especially off the west coast of Canada, Vancouver Island. Some of the more modern history of the church, by modern, I mean 1972, is we had, the vision was so cool. We've got, there was a pastor that came along. His name's Ross, Ross Fox. And owned all this property around the church building that I'm currently sitting in. And they started selling off chunks of property. And as they'd sell off a chunk of property, they started building this new location. They wanted to be a new location, new building. And the stories are just so cool of them. Like, literally, they'd sell a plot of land. Like, the neighborhood that the church is now in used to belong to the church.
Wow.
And so they'd sell a plot, and then they'd build a portion of the church, sell a plot, build a portion of the church. And there's this fun story of, like, all of these big beams were up, and they couldn't afford the next stage, next step. So they couldn't sell this one plot, so they ended up just building a spec home on the plot, selling the spec home, and then they could roof the place. But before they even roofed it, they had to sandblast the thing. Because the weather had worn the beams so much. So just kind of crazy, neat moments like that. So then the building was built mortgage-free, just blessing the next, and just like a visionary leader in Ross Fox. And so since him, there's been 1, 2, 3, and then me, lead pastors, and his wife, who's 99, well, turns 99 in May, she still sits under leadership. In the service, and writes me cards and tells me how great of a job I'm doing and how blessed we are. And so, man, we've got a rich history in this church. So we're still in that space. We're still in that neighborhood, still believing for great things that God wants to do in the Comox Valley.
When you like have a moment of clarity, maybe it's mid-sermon or, you know, sometimes our mind's somewhere else, even when we're preaching, and you kind of catch a glimpse of Mrs. Fox. What does that do for you? Like, I mean, it's pretty special to have this reminder that you're stewarding something that came before you, that something that will go after you, God willing. And yeah, what kind of impact does that have on you personally?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always good for us to remember that we're not the starters of something, that we're not the initiators of whatever we're doing. We often think that we're doing the fresh thing, and if only the generation before me knew what I know. Imagine what they could have accomplished. It's good for us once in a while to be tied back through history and to be reminded of what has come before and the faithfulness, the ingenuity, the creativity, the teamwork, the unity that was built behind us is so key and so valued. So it's inspiring because because my belief is all of a sudden that I wasn't the beginner, the starter, or the finisher of this. I mean, we know that Jesus, he's the one who started something, is faithful to see it through to completion. But even outside of Jesus, even just within leadership, it's not me and Jesus doing this thing. It's all of the lead pastors who've come along. It's all those who've tithed along the way, all those who, you know, built along the way, all those who shared the gospel in the city along the way. All of these together have created this moment. And Ruth Fox is just one of those who gets to remind me of that. And so it's so rich. And the other thing it does for me is it helps me to tell our, like, you know, 50 and 60 year olds, 40, 50, 60 year olds who have, like, who are starting to turn around and say, wait a second, we used to do church this way. Why are we doing it this way? And I'm like, hey, Ruth's seen it a lot more different ways than you. Yeah. She's still cheering me on. So
come on.
You should take a page out of her book for now. Let's talk after.
Yeah. I love that, dude. It's what a special, rare thing. I mean, it's just so rare for so many reasons. And just such a special gift to have that in your world. And now you started leading Northgate when you were 29. Yeah. And so this is a church with a lot of history, not, you know, especially for the area, not a small church for the area. I don't know where you want to start in the story, but, you know, how did you find yourself there at Northgate at 29, this church with, at that point, almost 80 years of history?
God did that for sure. I was sort of second in an associate kind of role, but had only been in that role for like 8 months before I was here.
At a different church on Vancouver Island at Coastline, used to be Glad Tidings.
Yeah, in Victoria. And so I was doing that. I was, you know, pretty happy in ministry. Still my greatest mentor and one of my closest friends is the lead pastor at that church, Andy. And so we had raised two of our kids were born there. We had good community, a lot of family around. Most all of my family, immediate family, lives there. And then my wife had lived in the Comox Valley for 4 months at a previous time, and promptly moved out because she didn't want to be there. She didn't connect as well as she had hoped, and so moved to Victoria. So she was in Victoria because she wanted out of the Comox Valley, and all of a sudden it was just something that took place. God started stirring our hearts for something. We honestly didn't want a change, but there was a sense in us that there might be change coming. And so we just kind of opened our hearts to it. And I actually got a phone call from a different pastor in the Comox Valley who I barely knew. And he told me about the job. Actually, he told me about a previous role, and I said, no, I'm happy where I'm at. I'm doing my thing. And for some reason, I prayed this prayer. I said, God, maybe for a lead role. And I felt like I was always committed to not being a lead pastor. So as soon as those words came out of my mouth, it was just bizarre that it was a strange moment. But 4 months later, I got a call saying, hey, there's a lead pastor role. Actually, do you want to take that? So I just felt like I couldn't close the door on it. We just felt like we had to stay open and sort of say yes, which has kind of marked my ministry journey, is just kind of like, you know, not by choice, but by calling kind of thing. Just if that's what you want, Lord, then we want to be willing. I remember saying to my wife, like, do you want to do this? And she's like, no, I don't think I do have. And I'm like, so are we doing it? And she said, I just really believe my heart will follow my obedience. And I believe that's what obedience is calling us to right now. So we just said yes. And like you said, Comox Valley, I mean, since then I've said, like, Lord, I think we would have said yes to anything. So thank you that it's the Comox Valley.
Yeah.
Like, it could have been anywhere. We could have ended up in a whole lot worse of places. But It really was not our choice. It wasn't what we, as far as our ministry trajectory was going, we felt like we were happy with where it was going. We liked our friendships. We liked our family. We liked the people we were with. In fact, the first Sunday that we checked out Northgate, the associate pastor who really wanted us to be there, he goes, "Oh, there's usually way more families than this." There were like no families there. We're trying to raise our young family. It's like, it was just a, you know, amazing church, amazing city, but it wasn't our plan. It wasn't our dream.
And ministry was, if I understand right, like you'd pursued actually a degree in training in teaching before you found yourself in ministry. And I feel like if I got the details right, you applied to be a youth volunteer at a church and they declined. You didn't even get that. And now you're in full-time ministry today. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Yeah. So I grew up in the church and I always served the church, always loved the church, felt like I should always be doing what God had asked, you know, I just felt like I should serve the church. And so when I moved to Victoria, I actually, like, Coastline Church in Victoria was where my parents went to youth group. Like, my really? Mom and dad graduated from Victoria High School. Like, that was, my grandma was there, it was home. So I've been to three churches in my life, the one I grew up in, then Coastline, and then this one. So I showed up to Coastline Church. Had always worked with youth, so I went into the youth pastor and said, "Hey, I'm looking to be a youth leader." It was a pretty small ministry at the time with, you know, not a lot of leaders. And he looks around, he goes, "We're full." And I'm like, I've never heard a youth pastor ever say that we have enough leaders.
No, thank you.
Like,
we don't need help.
That's just ridiculous. And so obviously something wrong with me. So I was like, well, whatever. I started drumming in the church. That was all. That was the extent of my serving. But then Andy saw something. He caught wind of, I don't know. It was calling of God. It was just he wanted to do something with what God was calling me to. And so he started having me speak at this young adults ministry that they were doing called Adore, and I mean, there was no reason I should be speaking at that thing. I was, I was just a drummer in the church, rejected youth leader, volunteer youth leader. But he started having me do that. And soon we built a relationship, connection. The youth pastor changed over and Andy kind of said, "Ev, I want you to be the full-time youth pastor at this place." And up until that point, like when I was young, I had a lot of people say, you need to be in full-time ministry, prophetic words or people speaking into my life or just even my experience. I was always serving and involved, but I come from a home that not everyone in my home would have appreciated that and would have celebrated that. And I was kind of given into a different way of living, I guess. I was like, I just want to go and teach. That's still pretty good. I can still serve the Lord. I can still serve the church. It'll be all good. I'll just do it that way. And so Andy got me going, asked me to be youth pastor. And I was just like, it was just too clear. My wife and I had been married at that point for, we got married in December 2008. And he asked me in August of 2009, I started. We just felt like God said, "Do it. I want you to do it."
I love hearing that about Andy. Andy's the lead pastor with his wife of Coastline today. And there's just such an amazing wake of impact from the people that he's, and he wouldn't even want to say he raised up. He would probably go, a small part to play, but it's like, I don't know, man, like it's an amazing legacy, like such a vibrant church on its own right. But then seeing how yourself and now a few others are leading churches across Canada and had formative years under Andy's leadership. I feel like that's one of the things that I'm trying to hold in my mind as part of sometimes it's like that's the secondary thing. I'm like, what if that's one of the main things we're supposed to do? You know,
I don't know.
At least for me, that's something I'm really trying to put my attention on and saying, hey, like when somebody transitions off our staff because they're hired somewhere else, you've experienced that, I've experienced that. What if that in some ways is success?
Yeah, come on, man. What, like, one of two things is going to happen here. Our vision is going to, God's going to bless us. We're going to blow up so much that we need every leader that we develop. Or we're going to be developing up someone for someone else's vision, and they're going to grow and head out. Like, just taking a minute on Andy, because we might as well. My wife and I were like, oh, we're going to have 1 year off from the church. We're just going to serve, and we're going to take a break from serving. We're just going to love each other and do all that. And it didn't work out the way we planned. So we just felt like God said, do it. I want you to do it.
I love hearing that about Andy. Andy's the lead pastor with his wife of Coastline Today. And there's just such an amazing wake of impact from the people that he's, and he wouldn't even want to say he raised up. He would probably go, a small part to play, but it's like, I don't know, man, like it's an amazing legacy, like such a vibrant church on its own right. But then seeing how yourself and now a few others are leading churches across Canada and had formative years under Andy's leadership. I feel like that's one of the things that I'm trying to hold in my mind as part of, sometimes it's like, that's the secondary thing. I'm like, what if that's one of the main things we're supposed to do, you know,
at
least for me, that's something I'm really trying to put my attention on and saying, hey, like when somebody transitions off our staff because they're hired somewhere else, you've experienced that, I've experienced that. What if that in some ways is success?
Yeah, come on, man. What, like, one of two things is going to happen here. Our vision is going to, God's going to bless us. We're going to blow up so much that we need every leader that we develop. Or we're going to be developing up someone for someone else's vision. And they're going to grow and head out. Like, just taking a minute on Andy, because we might as well. And he's still the call when I'm having a hard time in ministry. He's still my first call. And in fact, we've grown so much together. Like, we can see God's strategy even for Vancouver Island and our heart to serve it together and see churches planted here and people reached here on Vancouver Island. We're in partnership in that. But that transition would have been hard for him. And he showed me how to transition leaders well. And I've now had the opportunity a couple of times. I owe a lot to him.
Wow. Your 9 years at Northgate and real sense of calling to go and chatting with you now, there's a vitality and a sense of conviction, but I know that in a time span of 9 years, that vision or that conviction sense of calling, it can waver, which is, you know, even me, I just, our church is just over 3 years old, but our first prayer meeting was just over 5 years ago for the church plant. And, and I've just been reflecting for myself, like my prayer, this point is, God, I think I'm supposed to stay. I don't think I'm supposed to go anywhere. I've been asking for a lot more than 5 years, but Lord, you have to renew my vision, my sense of like, because something like substantive had changed inside of me about like, even like rewind 18 months ago, this white hot, like no one could really stop me vision to, and I think as I reflect on it, I was trying to look for a circumstance and I just realized, I think this is part of the life cycle of leadership, that there's a renewal work. And I think that's part of God's design. It's not just our short attention spans, but I think we have to go through a renewal of vision because he wants to do something new. And I'm just curious for you, if you've had, what your experience has been over those 9 years of reconnecting with that sense of calling that brought you there in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, man. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for your honesty in that. It's a hard thing, because the people around you, there's a sense as leaders, everyone needs to know that I'm solid and I'm good and you can count on me. But we don't always feel 100% that way. And if we can share that in a healthy way, I think that's good. So for me, I often say, I remember getting up on stage after being here a few years on a Sunday morning and saying, I've never had an easier job. It was just all good. It was all good, man. We went from, you know, my first 5 years here, we went from one service to three. We launched a campus in a city an hour away. We redid a big kitchen project in the building. We were seeing baptisms and salvations, and small groups were growing and booming. We had started an internship, and we saw many leaders being developed. Some of who I thought were the highest quality leaders that were around were asking me, can we come and work there and serve there? And I'm like, man, this is, why doesn't everyone do ministry? Like, this is the easiest thing ever. And honestly, that was my first 5 years, all up and to the right. Our giving was moving that direction. There's lots of neat stories along the way of that. But if I were just to paint a broad picture of what I felt like for almost the first 5 years, I felt like, I love this. This is awesome and fun. And 2020, at the beginning of 2020, we got in January. So before 2020 was hard for everyone else, it was hard for us. We got a diagnosis for one of our kids that rocked our world. It was going to be a life-changing diagnosis, though we still regularly pray that God might do something different there. And so does our child who was impacted with this. But we spent a long time, a lot of time praying, a lot of time crying, a lot of time just being numb, a lot of time taking communion in our kids' room and praying through the nights and just being broken, January 2020. And I remember that was like sort of the first hit for me of realizing like it just made me question everything. It was like, what? Why are we doing that? What is a church service anyways? Like, what is this music that we play and like the gathering that we have, which, I mean, we hear that a lot from different people who are stuck in really deconstructive kind of mentalities. But that was happening for me. I was really stuck in a spot being like, man, I don't know what any of this is worth. At the end of the day, how big this issue is for my child and our family, like, am I really going to take all those extra hours just to make sure we put on that event or to like do that thing or try to be like, you know, whatever it is, whatever we were doing, everything just came into question for me. And then March 2020 hit and COVID caught us all. And I mean, there was lots of neat stories in that time and that we celebrated and that we were able to celebrate throughout. But it was also a devastating time.
Yeah.
We felt similar to what lots of people, just like deep polarity rising up amongst people. Like in one day I had two texts. One text of someone leaving the church. I'm leaving the church because the church isn't standing on the word of God and you're too tight on mask restrictions. Next text, someone leaving the church because we're too loose on mask restrictions. Oh. Like, now there's two families that left our church because of how we handled COVID, and they ended up at the same church as each other. It's like, how does that, that's like, there's nothing logical going on. You just felt like every decision you make was bad and wrong. And it was just tough. And then, near the end, we actually, like, we're hearing, it's mixed, right? You're hearing, yeah, there's still the risk of COVID, there's still the honest health risks of COVID, but there's also mental health stuff is on the rise, addiction stuff is on the rise, suicide rates on the rise. So we're having healthcare workers, some who are saying we got to be watching out for COVID, and some who are saying, you know, we have a bigger issue on our hands, and it's addiction, and it's suicide, and it's mental health, and these are both people speaking to us from the hospitals. Right? Mm-hmm. What do we do? So all the way through COVID, we said, we're going to do nothing more, nothing less than the government allows, because we don't want to be As long as that we don't feel the church is being unrightfully handled, we're just going to do we're going to trust that the government's doing their best, and we're going to do nothing more and nothing less than what they say. And so there was a season when the government had said no to public gatherings except churches. Churches could meet and could gather. And so there was a conference that we hadn't done for 2 years, and we ran it. We ran the youth conference based on the idea of, like, yeah, there's some risks of COVID, but there's a lot going on, a lot of hurting people out there.
Yeah, especially teenagers.
So let's run it and see what happens, kind of thing. Let's see if people come or not. And, you know, we had set things in place as far as masks and requirements and things that people needed to do. But it's a youth conference. No one listened, and they just kind of went for it. And at the same time that happened, looking back, there was a swell starting to take place in the Comox Valley of COVID. And man, it went crazy. From the conference, COVID blew up in our area. And though we're getting people messaging us like, so thankfully did that, my kid's life has changed, but none of that mattered in that moment. We couldn't share any of that. We weren't saying any of that. We were public enemy number one in our whole city. And wow. And on the island, there's news reporters coming up from Victoria. And my a video of me is all over. Everyone's sharing it on social media.
We're just getting blasted. Oh, I'm so sorry, dude. That's so hard.
Yep. Yeah, man, it was tough. And I've got COVID in my basement. Like, we've got cool stories of, like, I've got people in the church going, hey, I've made 12 soups for 12 families. Where do they go? And we're sending them to people. People can't leave their house and get groceries. And so, but Vancouver Island Health Authority's calling, like, what was this conference? What did you do? People are like, well, how did you think this? We're getting calls, people saying, you've ruined Christmas, we can't get together. Calls from people on Lower Mainland saying, we've kept COVID out of our schools, there's some high-risk people, and you've brought it into the schools now. I'm like, man, what's going to happen? We had people who got really sick with COVID in our area. Like, it was just, and so when I already felt like I didn't even want to make decisions after we learned about our child, and then we tried to navigate through COVID, and then every decision you make is wrong to someone. Mm-hmm. And then this was the ultimate one of, like, you've ruined everything kind of thing. And man, I would have been fine if I never had to make a decision that mattered again in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, I was down and out. And, at that time, soon after that, things started easing off, of a lot of things. And so a lot of my friends were pastoring and leading churches and talking about how they're just blowing up and growth and new vibrancy and new life. And that wasn't the case for me. Our church was okay, and I was still in it. But I was dead, man. If I had vision, I didn't want to pull the trigger on any decision making. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do any of that. And so that was like a really, really hard time for me. I would so wanted just out. I just wanted to not be doing what I was doing. And I guess God just wouldn't let me. I just kept feeling like, if I leave, someone else comes in, and whatever's been broken here doesn't heal, because if I was the one that broke it, if people are going to blame me for this, then I need to be here all the way through the healing process. I need to be here all the way until they start trusting leadership again, they start trusting churches again and stuff. So that was hard. So we post-COVID, I think we took a lot longer than some of my friends feeling momentum and life again in the church. And I'm having friends say, oh man, we're only 2/3 of what we are. I'm like, oh, I would love 2/3 of what we were before. Like, we're like, you know, we probably started at 40% of what we were pre-COVID. And
what, can you just take me into your headspace there? Like, man, it's all fine and good. We all say things like, we don't care about the numbers, they don't affect us. It's like, but it does. And, you know, it's one thing, you know what I love about, I do this all the time. It's like, oh, Sunday was down, but it was family days. It was the week, it was the Sunday before, people must have been trapped. Like, we have all these reasons, but you can kind of reason away 10%, but 60%. All of a sudden now it's like, take me into the kind of that moment of your own self-talk, and maybe more accurate than self-talk is like honest prayer. You know, what's happening for you internally in those moments?
Yeah. Well, I felt like a failure, honestly. Like, I felt like, and I didn't feel like I could talk to anyone about it. Because some of my friends were, they're either dealing with something similar and, man, that's just too much weight to put on them. Or I'm trying to champion my friends who are seeming to do really well. But I just felt, I felt like I failed the church. Felt like I had failed my family. I felt like I had failed, throughout the whole thing. I always felt God's love. You know, He's so faithful. But everything else was felt broken to me. Like, I missed the mark, and yeah, though numbers don't matter to us, we had a conversation in our staff meeting this week, just sort of looking at, hey, how many people were here on Sunday. And instantly someone said, we had that many, but most people only come every 2 weeks. So probably it's actually this. I said, we're not going to say that, guys. That's not
it's a complex algorithm that justifies.
Because at the end of the day, it's not, it's not about what number potentially is connected to this church. It's how effective are we discipling the number that we have, and we do want to see growth. Like, we do want to see that we're moving in a positive rate and having an effect of reaching people. So when all of a sudden we've shrunk, and I mean, I think a lot of people ended up okay. They ended up, this was the first time that we were seeing people leave our church and go to other churches. And when they went to other churches, that's okay. Like, that was working. But it was like, you're seeing some of your key volunteers or leaders calling you, like, hey, I saw so-and-so at this welcome party at this other church. Like, why are they there? Like, I remember there was one of my most meaningful moments of my whole history as a pastor was being with a family and having a really significant moment when a woman died in the hospital room. I was with them, and I actually sort of helped hold her hand through the moment. It was really powerful. Well, those people that I was there because of, who had called me, they're going to another church. And I'm like, man, we just walked through so much together. And so it's just sort of feel like, who are my people? If those aren't the people that I can lean on and trust in, who are the people that are with me? Sort of no matter what. Like, how many people were just here because we were the big church and we were the growing church and, you know, we were the flashy church? Is anyone here because they want to just do ministry with me and walk with me? So I felt empty, man. I don't know how else to say it. I just felt pretty empty all the way around.
I appreciate taking the time to share that. And then what does that rediscovery part of the journey look like for you? Talk about that journey of kind of recapturing a sense of courage and confidence and calling.
Yeah. there were a few things that started being significant for me that helped me to shake some things off. And I actually on the recovery was when I started realizing how broken I was. And I'd often say to people, I didn't know I was so lacking vision until I started gaining vision again. And I didn't know I was so lacking life and expectation and faith until I started engaging those things again. But practically, there were a couple things for me that just awoken something. And And these aren't things that everyone can do, but there might be some principles within those that might help. But like one of the things, I got the opportunity to head over to London with Alpha Canada. And I remember going to church there, and that was with Andy actually too. Mm-hmm. And going there and seeing the church alive. Mm-hmm. And that was good for me, realizing and remembering what we talked about before. This was here before me and it'll be here after me. Like this is, the church is what Jesus said he's going to build, and he's the one doing it. And I'm a brushstroke in his masterpiece. Like I'm not the full work. For even Northgate, I'm not the full work. Not even while I'm the lead pastor of the church, I'm not even the full work of that. But also I fit in with a history of other lead pastors that have come before and will be after me, and other staffs and volunteers and teams. But even within my context, like the church in Canada is bigger and broader than me. And now the church global, and being in church in London at, HTB, you realize like not only in multiple global locations all over the world is the church meeting and gathering. It's also through history that the church has been meeting and gathering. And it's just, it redeemed the fact that I felt little in that time, because I did. I felt like I was a big pastor for a while, I was kind of the one. There's moments in my head. I remember having lunch with a family that went to another church because they were connected with a family in our church, and they said, "How big is your church?" And I told them, and they're like, "What? There's never been a church that big in the Comox Valley." And those were things that I, yeah, that's right, And that had been swept out from me. I was broken, and it wasn't, our church wasn't going great, and in lots of ways. But the church might have said it was because they're gracious and kind, but I knew it wasn't. And so I just felt small, and it felt like that God redeemed the smallness for me, and just reminded me that I was never meant to be more than just a brushstroke. We often talk about that, a brushstroke in his masterpiece. And so that was really helpful. And not long after that, I had a chance to gather with some other pastors. You were part of that, Jay. And there were just a few redemptive moments remembering the long-term, broad-sweeping work of the church that started with Jesus, will be carried out by Jesus, and helping to understand how big, like the vastness of the church through history and through our globe is absolutely unattainable by anything that I could do, anything that Taylor Swift can't be, like some of these big names that we hear about constantly right now. They're blips compared to Jesus throughout history and all. And so just knowing that, I think, was really good for me to go, man, the church is big and long lasting, and it just let me settle back into I'll take my small piece.
Yeah.
However big that small piece is, however big it looks, however many people look to me in that, it's a very, very small piece. Mm. So if I'm leading a church of 200 or 2,000, compared to all history and all the globe, I'm carrying a very small piece. So what does it matter? Let's just be obedient. So that was the start. That wasn't the end for sure, but that was the start for me of really recovering.
One of the interesting things for our team hosting this podcast, some of the work we do around it, is discovering that one of the ways that we can find strength, like me in Vancouver, I'm somehow strengthened knowing that you're going for it in Comox.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's actually by like zooming in on different stories that helps me see the big story of the church in Canada. And you can obviously go wider, and that somehow makes me both more courageous and more content at the same time where I am. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I think that's one of the things that we can find ourselves maybe too, at least for myself, pretty zeroed in with the activities in front of me.
Yeah.
And uh, I, I just think it's such a gift to see the global church and the diversity of the church.
Yeah, Foursquare, the denomination part of Foursquare in Canada is pretty small. Globally, it's massive. And I got to be at our Foursquare International Convention a couple years back, and there's a woman from Indonesia there she's doing like these massive crusades, seeing tens of thousands of people coming to faith in Jesus. And she not only that, she's also launching orphanages in all of these cities and seeing thousands of kids coming off the street and going to this like massive organizational. And I remember sitting with her and feeling like she needs to know that there's someone on Vancouver Island fighting the same fight for her, so she can focus on what she's doing there. And for me to remember, like, to be inspired by her story and go, I'm going to do what I can in the place that I'm in, so that when I talk to her and see her faithfulness, I'm going to fight for my peace. And it keeps me from trying to fight for hers or trying to fight for someone else's. I'll be really faithful to what God has given me in my space. Mm.
I love that, man. You know, one of the things, this is a big pivot, but I just wanted to make sure we made time to chat about, I'm so interested to hear about the work you're doing with seniors in the Comox Valley. Can you just tell me a little bit about, because I just think it's such an abrupt pivot, but I just didn't want to miss the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah. First of all, it's way too generous to say the work that I'm doing with seniors. We've got an amazing, one of the things I've learned about leadership development is God has put certain things on certain people's hearts, and it's my job to empower and help people run with kind of the passions and drives that are in them. So we've got an amazing woman on our team her whole life she dreamt of being a pastor. Instead, she worked in colleges, and she's got her master's in leadership, and she's done some fun things. So she started getting educated in ministry, theology, in her 60s, and then she's been a pastor with us for about 4 years. And I think about that, and she's now in her 70s, and she's just recognized the need for two things. One, for seniors to still be in ministry and engage in ministry, and then two, the needs of seniors in our community that are just, you know, some ending up on the street, some ending up very low income, broken situations, all of that. So we've gotten to pair some of those things. We've run an internship here for the last 7 years, and for about four of those, we've been doing something called Vintage Disciples, which is like a retiree internship. So we've sort of said there's two common moments in life, common for everyone, that are disorienting stages. One's graduation and one's retirement. Graduate from high school, everything's been laid out for you, and now you look around and go, what am I supposed to do? Retirement, often you've been running a career for a long time. Retire and go, what am I supposed to do now? And so in both of those, we wanted spots for people to be developed in ministry. So a lot of people dreamt of ministry, but then started family and got moving and felt like, I can't afford that, and I can't go to school, and so I just have to do my career.
Yeah.
So we want to give them a chance when they retire. So we've seen people rise in that, and the ministry that we committed ourselves to with our Vintage Disciples was to care for the seniors in our city, and particularly in our care homes. So we're running spiritual carer courses, they're called. And it's partnered with the city. Post-COVID, some places, like our schools in town, want way less Christian influence. Our care homes want way more. So
interesting.
They're just saying, you come. We don't really care who you are. We just need help. And so we're like, okay, but we're going to come with the gospel. We're going to come and share Jesus. And they're like, well, will you love them? And they're like, yeah, of course we'll do that. So they're swinging the doors wide open. More and more opportunities are coming. So Jan's leading a team. Every week we send three teams to three different care homes that are doing sort of pastoral meetings, helping people who are nearing death and helping them process that, praying for them. We're doing funerals. We run services. And just seeing a lot of really, really fun things happen that way. And Jesus is just being glorified in maybe a surprising way. Mm-hmm. So we're really thankful. We've really valued being a multi-generational church too. And so it makes sense that some education rooms, some theology classrooms around here are filled with 18-year-olds and 80-year-olds. We had an 82-year-old come. I can't believe I still get a chance to grow towards being a pastor. Mm-hmm. So we're really thankful for that, man.
I love that. I think I almost feel bad for how much I bring up the question of like the pipeline and who's going to lead the church of tomorrow. And sometimes the imagination is always, how do we pipeline young people into ministry? I think that's part of it. That's a big part of it. We need more young leaders. That's a crisis in our time. We've got to do it. But I think one of the there's probably lots more, but two other unique ways that God is answering the prayer of who will lead in the gap that we are currently experiencing in church leadership across Canada. And one of that is missionaries coming from all over the world, that well-trained, thoughtful Christians and pastors from all over the world are finding themselves coming to Canada, which is a great gift. Like, it's a real special way that God is responding to that prayer. But then also I think it's inviting people, like retirement looks different today. Some are retiring, say, at 65, some are retiring earlier, have many meaningful years and all of the wisdom of life, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe just some things to be trained in. But, like, they've developed, like, skills and even EQ and, you know, they've proven, like, a good track record in their faith. And so I think it's another part, piece of the puzzle is how do we create on-ramps, not just into, like, full-time staff ministry, but into all expressions of ministry. And I just love that vision of a seniors ministry. It's not just about playing hymns, but also about training you for ministry. And it can be both, of course, you know?
Yeah, we have a bit of both. We have a bit of both for sure. But man, it's a really rich environment. Thankful for it.
I'm very thankful for you, Evan. I've enjoyed our friendship. I think you and I first met when you were youth pastoring and I was probably trying to promote the Alpha Youth series to you.
I bet. Yeah, I bet.
But I just remember having coffee with you in Victoria a lot of years ago. And I have cherished the opportunities along the way where we've got to connect, and grateful that you would spend this time with us on the podcast today. It's a real gift.
Such a pleasure. I really appreciate getting to share, and so thankful for what you guys are doing.
Well, Evan, we're so thankful that you would take time to join us on the conversation today. Hey, one fun note coming out of the conversation is that Andy, who we referred to very affectionately in the podcast from Coastline Church, has said yes to join us on the podcast. You can look forward to that episode coming out soon. Hey, before we wrap up today, I want to say thank you to a few people who helped make this episode happen. Special thanks to Alex Brown, Ralph Avaro for arranging and capturing and editing today's conversation, and to John Wright and the team at Generis for partnering with us to make this work possible. That's it from us today. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope that you'll join us again soon. Tons of love, and bye for now.